Hi, this is Rudy Novotny, the voice of America's marathons. We all love how much running has benefited every aspect of our lives, so much so that most of us only wish we'd started sooner. Wouldn't it be wonderful to give the opportunity to children of today? Well, you can. The Morning Mile is a before-school walking and running program that gives children the chance to start each day in an active way while enjoying fun, music, and friends. That's every child, every day. It's also supported by a wonderful system of rewards, which keeps students highly motivated and frequently congratulated. Created by our favorite fitness expert, Fitz Kohler, Morning Milers across the country have run over 2 million miles and are having greater success with academics, behavior, and sports because of it. The Morning Mile is free to the child, free to the school, and is inexpensively funded by businesses or generous individuals. Help more kids get moving in the morning by visiting morningmile.com. Champion the program at your favorite school or find out more about sponsorship opportunities. That's morningmile.com. Long may you run.
Hi, everyone. This is Mike, just back from the inaugural Star Wars The Dark Side race weekend down in Orlando. Hope everybody who was able to go down there had fun. We want to thank everyone for coming up and saying hi to us, and we hope everybody is enjoying their bling. Again, this is a reminder that our next event is going to be the weekend of August 19th, 20th, and 21st. We're going to have a Jungle Cruise Challenge event. Phil Vanderpool once again came up with a great idea. If you want more information on it, go to www.junglecruisechallenge.com. If you want some information on travel packages from Mouse Fan Travel, you go to www.mousefantravel.com. And on the front page, there's a white box that says Mouse Fan Deals. And right at the top, it says 8/19/16 Mickey Miles Jungle Cruise Challenge. And you can find all you need to know about booking your trip to that. Anyways, just wanted to remind you of that. And now let's go on to episode 372 of the Mickey Miles and More podcast.
The Mickey Miles podcast is brought to you by MEI Travel and Mouse Fan Travel, who will handle your family vacation, reunion, honeymoon, corporate incentive trip, or getaway as if it were their own, bringing premium service and expert advice to help you get the most out of your vacation dollar. Visit them at mei-travel.com or mousefantravel.com.
Hi, this is Chris Jancic from Long Island, New York, and I love listening to the Mickey Miles and More podcast.
This is the Mickey Miles and More podcast, your one stop for information on Disney races, Disney vacations, Disney theme parks, and more. Now, here are your hosts for the Mickey Miles and More podcast, Michelle Scribner-McLean, Chris Eliopoulos, and Mike Scopa.
Welcome to episode 372 of the Mickey Miles and More podcast. My name is Mike Scopa, and with me on the show, first and foremost, ladies first, Michelle Scribner-McLean. Michelle, we did a little 10K today.
10K, a soup kitchen 10K. We have a local soup kitchen in town, and with Kristen McWilliams, we tore it up on all the hills today.
And I'd like to say I'm very proud. I finished fourth in my age group. Of course, there were only four people in my age group, but I finished fourth.
Yeah, so it was good. It was good. A lot of hills. Yeah. A lot of hills.
And with us on the show always is Chris Eliopoulos. Hello, Chris.
Hi, Mike. How are you doing?
And we're looking forward to your song of the show, I guess.
Okay, so since you've dressed so appropriately with your white disco outfit, your black shirt, and your gold chains,
why
and your
we
bell
put
bottoms.
The video on? Mm.
I know, I'm sorry. I figured I would choose the Bee Gees' You Should Be Dancing because you look the part.
I know that one.
Yeah, excellent.
I
can't remember who it was I was having. I met a listener recently who was, oh, I know who it was. It was Casey Kinnon. I was in Kansas City, Casey from KC, and I was there for a conference. And she told me, Chris, that she loves how you always find music that Mike hasn't heard. And she thinks it's hysterical.
I'm trying.
It's a conspiracy. Michelle, do you have a shout out?
I do. At the time that this airs, it will already be done, but we're recording this before the Boston Marathon. And Chad Werick, who is on the Mickey Milers, is running, has a bib for the Boston Gay Man's Chorus. And he's a teacher and musician, and he's running his first Boston Marathon. And
he finished yesterday.
Well, yeah, he finished by the time this. So we know he's going to do a great job and have a great time. And so that's my shout out today.
Congratulations. Yeah. Congratulations, Chad.
Yeah, nothing like it.
We have a very, very special guest. He's He and I became friends about 10 years ago in a little, I think it's a borough of New York. It's called Soho. And we met on the night that I believe Jay Rizzullo announced the Year of a Million Dreams.
That was and, 10 years ago.
That was about 10 years ago, I believe, if not more. He is a Grammy-nominated writer-producer for the Walt Disney Company and a dear friend and a great guy, and he's just celebrating. He's just started to celebrate his 30th year with Walt Disney, and I think that's just amazing. We are so proud to and excited to welcome onto the show Greg Erbar. Greg, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you. It's nice to be here.
So we want to talk to you about a lot of things. I think the first thing I would like you to do is to tell our audience a little bit about your career with Walt Disney World, and it's just an amazing career. So please,
well,
you have the mic.
Always wanted to work for Disney ever since I was a kid. I grew up with Disney music in the house. When I was born, my dad bought a Sears Silvertone stereo and played Pinocchio, Peter Pan, and Snow White soundtracks on it. And then my first LP was the Darlene Gillespie, Tootie Camarada, Alice in Wonderland, still to this day my favorite record of all time. And I had the books and the comics, but the records more than anything else. And I always loved Disney. I loved other kinds of cartoons and TV as well, but Disney's the most special. And when Disney World was built, I first went there in junior high and just said, somehow I'm going to be part of this. I don't really know how, but I'm going to be part of it. And I went to college, studied film and communications. Freelance wrote for a long time, worked a lot in retail to pay the bills, moved up to Orlando. I worked in reservations while I was still freelancing for various parts of the company. Reservations was great because I could learn a lot of inside things, top to bottom. You have to know a lot to work there. And I started writing for them. For 2 years, I was writing their briefings and the training things, and we made videos, and it was a lot of fun things. And meanwhile, I was writing for the Eyes and Ears and for marketing and for merchandise. Then I got hired by Resort Design, which is now Disney Design Group. And there I did name things. I mean, I did writing and brochures and stuff, but I also named things, nomenclature. Like my wife and I named things at Port Orleans. Let's see, Jackson Square, Gifts and Desires, the Laundry on the Levee, the Bon Famille's Cafe, which is not there anymore, Scat Cats, that was from Aristocats, the Doubloon Lagoon Pool, Scales, the Sea Serpent. He didn't have a name before. We gave him a name. And things like that I had done. That was one of the things I did for Resort Design. I also did the very first launch video for Disney Weddings. It didn't exist, and all it was a piece of paper that Michael Eisner had written and said, change the way weddings are done, Disney Weddings, you know, basically show me how you would do it. So we put together a presentation, and he and his wife watched it and said, hey, I love it, let's do it. And that was pretty much my only involvement with Disney Weddings, was at the very beginning. But I got a lot of cool things assigned to me when I was at Resort Design. And then I moved over to marketing and worked for the last 25 or so years in the creative department. It's now called Yellow Shoes for Mickey Shoes. Mm-hmm. And there I wrote the first national TV spots that Disney ever did with Beauty and the Beast. That was animation and live action. I wrote an attraction on Main Street in our 25th anniversary. We had a film. You would go in, say the year that you first visited, they'd give you a badge, there would be exhibits, and then you'd watch a film with Mickey and a crystal ball, talking crystal ball, and that was the film that we had shot. We actually shot it here in Orlando, and that was a lot of fun, and did a lot of things that you, I mean, the usual things, commercials, the radio commercials. I did the first commercial for the Disney Animal Kingdom before it even was commercials. We did the in-room ones. That we allowed guests to see it first, guests in the hotels to see the park first. Did a lot of in-room things. I produced the music that you hear when you're on the Walt Disney World Today channel. I picked out all that stuff, and we recorded that also in downtown Orlando with the same people who recorded the When You Wish Upon a Star for the What Are You Going to Do Next commercials. Mm-hmm. We picked songs that Disney fans would know, not necessarily songs everyone would know, only a few. And that still runs. I work on the when you get on put on hold, I work on those recordings for the phones. And the Mickey Monitor has sort of been my pride and joy for many, many years. I've been the editor of that. We doubled it in size. We added a lot of fun bonus material to it, giveaways, articles and interviews you can't find anywhere else. We really, really tried, because I grew up reading Disney News and Wonderful World of Disney magazine at Gulf, and I think of that when I'm working on those things. People read these things, they enjoy them, and that's the part that you take home with you and you read over and over again anticipating your next trip. So those really are special to me. And then I can just go on and on, because I do a lot of things for Walt Disney Records, for D23, live presentations, just all different kinds of things, and books and magazines and stuff like that there.
So basically you have my dream job, I think.
Well, you know, I can't believe the things that happen, but I, you know, because it doesn't seem real. But I'll be honest with you, it's not always easy, and it's like the Emerald City, which Disney World, Disneyland is like. There are as Dorothy says, some of it isn't very nice, but most of it's beautiful.
So I think you and Chris have a lot in common. I'm going to turn this over to exactly. Chris, because I'm sure Chris has a question or two.
Yeah, one of the things I noticed big time was that we have similar experiences. You've worked writing graphic novels for some of the Disney Pixar properties, huh?
Yeah, I wrote Lilo and Stitch. I co-wrote Mulan, Atlantis, Hercules, The Incredibles. In fact, The Incredibles and Mulan got reprinted recently. They did these thick treasuries of comics, mm-hmm. and it was nice to see the, especially Incredibles, because that didn't get published in its entirety in the United States. There was a different version in the United States, and a lot of the comics I write get printed in other languages.
But yeah, they go international. Yeah. Do you was it for the Disney magazine, or were you doing it for a comic company, or was it Disney's publishing?
It depends on the project. I wrote a Bugs Life book for a company that does volume books for grocery stores, and so they were contracted to do it. When I wrote for Disney Adventures, that was for when we had a comics division.
Right.
And for those particular things, that was for actually Italy, because there's a lot of comics in Italy and France, and so a lot of it originates there and then gets distributed all over the world.
Yeah, I've been working for Marvel for about 28 years now. So we sort of own you now, or you own us. And, you know, it's interesting to see. And I'm actually doing children's books now, too. So you've written a bunch of children's books as well, huh? Do you find them harder, less hard to do than your quote-unquote day job of writing and naming things?
Well, I prefer a job that where you create something from scratch, or you adapt something that has a story to it. I mean, writing advertising is fun, and I love telling stories and doing the sort of nonfiction articles that I do. Though I think that's probably the thing that's the most gratifying, is being able to talk to people and interview people. But it's nice to do something that is original. I think the thing I'm proudest of is a very small thing. Sometimes the small things are the things that you just cherish. I wrote a read-along for Christmas. It's called Cinderella, So This Is Christmas. And you can get it on Amazon. Either there's a French-Canadian one that comes like a CD, but it's a read-along book. It looks like a DVD package, but it's actually a CD. And it also comes in a box with other Princess Christmas stories. And it was a great, great story, because it came from a real story that happened to me. I won't go into detail, but basically I just had a rude relative who didn't like a handmade gift. And all I did was just change it to the stepsisters and
perfect.
It into the story. And it really came out real sweet and nice.
Payback's a joy, huh?
So, Greg, one of the things that, you know, as I'm listening to your story, that I hear as a theme is your love of Disney music from, you know, very early. That sounds like it was a very formative sort of memory for you with all the music you had. And I know you're involved with the Disney Music Emporium, and I wanted to hear more about that.
Well, that is a wonderful thing, and not a lot of people know that it's there. So it's I'm glad you're asking about that. I appreciate that. The Disney Music Emporium is an official company-run website that is aimed at people who love Disney music, either the classic Disney musics, or I hate to say the word new classics because it's kind of a marketing term, but you would just as easily have Frozen or Moana on there, or Star Wars, because those are classic properties, even if they're new things. But it also is where the Silly Symphonies set is being sold, and the Disney Legacy Collection, and they're putting out quite a few new vinyls. In fact, we may get on the air but just in time to tell you about some of the things they're going to have for Record Store Day, because that's kind of exciting. It's the first time Disney's ever been involved in Record Store Day, because vinyl has become very popular again. So the Disney Music Emporium, we run a story every 2 weeks, an original story by, not just by me, because nobody knows everything, and so I certainly don't. So we ask people like, let's see, we had Tim Hollis, who co-wrote Mouse Tracks, The Story of Walt Disney Records, with me, and Jim Fanning, Jeff Curdy, Russell Schroeder, a lot of people who, Jim Hollifield, a lot of different people who you may have heard of in other books, writing essays about various aspects of Disney records or Disney music. It might be a theme, it might be a type of record, it might be a behind-the-scenes thing, but we've had really good response to those stories. And then on the website, they also have all the different product lines of things that you can get. And some of those things are sold exclusively on the site. Some of them are available elsewhere. But if that succeeds, they're going to keep doing it. And when they had an expo, a D23 expo, they had a setup there, a display, and it was very exciting because the response was tremendous. People really do want to see some of this classic stuff come back and also see it reimagined in different ways. So they're trying to balance the old with the new and not lose sight of what got everybody there.
And one of the classics is The Jungle Book, that is making its appearance this month, film-wise. And Greg, you were involved in a, is it a magazine, The Jungle Book magazine?
Yeah, it's the official movie magazine. It's on sale. I saw it at Target and at Barnes & Noble, pretty much wherever magazines are sold. And it's one of those official movie magazines. It's very glossy and pretty and looks nice on the coffee table. And the way I wrote that was, I didn't write the whole thing. What I did was I wrote and put together a 48-page group of pages and spreads and picked out all the pictures and stuff, but they were for any number of uses. It's almost like what they call a toolkit. They send that internationally, and then publishers all over the world choose what sections they want. So the section that ended up in this magazine is the Meet the Characters section, and that's the part that I wrote the text for, the captions, and we had to go through the animated classic art and choose the scenes and choose scenes from the new movie and all of that. I also wrote children's activities and the making of the live action film, things like that that did not get into this edition. But in other languages and in other countries, it would get in there. So what is in this magazine also are profiles that others wrote and created about the makers of the movies, about Jon Favreau and things like that. And what's great about being able to do this is that Jon Favreau is such a fan of the original, and especially the Golden Age Disney classics, Snow White, Pinocchio, Fantasia, Dumbo, and Bambi, that he really, really gets it. You know, he studied Walt's notes, his meetings. You may have heard some of those things on DVD bonus features, where they sort of act out Walt's meetings, because they were all transcribed. He studied that. So his attitude going into making this movie isn't, well, forget what that thing was, we're going to reimagine it and make it different. It's that we love that. It's there. It's terrific. We appreciate that. Now we're going to look at it in a different way, but in no way replace it, which is a healthy attitude to have when you do a reimagining. You know, too often we get that, well, forget the one you loved, which is very insulting to the audience. It's like, you're already putting me on the defensive by saying, well, forget that one. That one's no good anymore. That's just old. You say you love this, we hope you love that. I think that's the attitude, and I find that very refreshing.
So, you know, getting back to the Disney Music Emporium, and that, you know, the marketing is the writing that you're doing, and certainly the advertising and the music. I see that the Jungle Book is going to be released on the Music Emporium on April 15th, and what do you do on this website? There's so many different aspects of it. There's news and videos, but there's also the music part of it. So it sounds like every day is a different adventure for you. So what do you do specifically with that?
Specifically, I either write the news stories, or I members of the Walt Disney Records staff might write some of the news items, you know, for a new product. Or we have the other Disney music experts write stories. And like the last one that appeared on there is the one about Record Store Day, which is the 16th of April. And that's the latest one. But we'll continue. I'm working on getting an interview with John Debney about the score of Jungle Book for a future article. And that's pretty much what I do on there. And like I said, people are reading it. They're socially, you know, it's going out on social networks. People are sharing the articles. And it's great because it's coming directly from Disney, and it's coming from people within the company who really do want to share this thing and really do care about it. Mm. You know, it's not totally forgotten. It's not locked up in a box. They want to find ways to get these things to people, but it's finding all the people and hearing what they want and want to say and all that. You know, the bigger that the internet gets and the bigger that social networks get, the more difficult it's going to be to hone in on those people. And that's what this website is trying to do.
It's an amazing website. The Disney Music Emporium. It's the www.disneymusicemporium.com. One word. It's very, I'm looking at it now. It's very, very well done. Thanks for listening to part one of our discussion with Greg Ehrbar. There is more to come in episode 373 of the Mickey Miles and More podcast, as you will discover some things that you probably didn't know about Greg Ehrbar. So, for Greg Ehrbar, for Chris Aliopoulos, for Michelle Scribner-McLean, and for me, Mike Scopa, thanks for listening. We'll see you on the road and in the parks.
The Mickey Miles Podcast is brought to you by MEI Travel and Mouse Fan Travel, who will handle your family vacation, reunion, honeymoon, corporate incentive trip, or getaway as if it were their own, bringing premium service and expert advice to help you get the most out of your vacation dollar. Visit them at mei-travel.com or mousefantravel.com.
We hope you enjoyed listening to today's episode of the Mickey Miles and More podcast. If you would like to support the podcast, please go to mickeymiles.podbean.com and click the green Become a Patron button in the upper right-hand corner of the menu bar. We thank you for your support. Don't forget, our discussion continues on Facebook at facebook.com/Mickey Miles Podcast. You can also follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/Mickey Miles Pod. Last of all, don't forget, if you have any questions for us, you can send them to questions@MickeyMilesPodcast.com. We'll try to answer them as soon as possible. For all of us here at the Mickey Miles and More podcast, this is Rick Gregg saying thanks for listening and all your support. And until next time, we'll see you on the road.